everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Somewhere in Between, the Trainee and Early Careers Podcast. Let me start again. Sorry. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Somewhere in Between, the Trainee and Early GP. What is this tagline?
Can
we just do the early careers?
So we're going to say the AIT and
AIT and early careers podcast.
Yeah.
Brought to you by the Royal College of GPs.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Somewhere in Between, the AIT and early careers podcast brought to you by the Royal College of GPs. I'm Anthony. I'm a recently qualified GP working in North London, and I'm back with two of my co-hosts, Mira and Hatim. Hello, guys.
Hi.
Sadly, our other co-host, Johannes, can't be with us here today as he is doing one of those horrible night shifts in A&E, but he did join us for the main part of this week's episode, which is an interview with Sophie and Adam, the current co-chairs of the AIT Advisory Network, part of the Royal College of GPs, and it was really great to catch up with them. We're going to jump straight into the interview and then we'll have a chat about it afterwards. So let's hear from Sophie and Adam. Yeah, it's going to be great to hear from one chair to another. I have to say that since I transitioned out of the role, I have not been keeping up at all with what's been happening with trainees. So it's going to be really exciting to hear from Adam and Sophie about their experiences so far. Thanks to both of you for joining us. And I guess the first question is going to be how you found the transition into the role. You're now a few months in. Obviously, we're still going through everything that COVID's throwing at us. There's been a lot of issues for trainees. How have you found the role so far?
I think it's been quite a steep learning curve, actually. Anthony, you were very helpful when we were sort of going, thinking about going for election in sort of preparing us just how sort of wide, far-reaching the role can be. But I suppose it's not until you actually get stuck into the role and attending all the different meetings, because there are many, many committees within the RCGP that make all the decisions that they make, that you realise just how sort of involved a role it can be. But from my point of view, it's been quite good to sort of get a bit of an overview about how the college works, how they come to the decisions that they do, the processes that they go through to come to those decisions, and also a privilege, really, to be able to sort of pass the trainee voice onto the college and sort of pass decisions back to trainees.
Yeah, I would echo what Adam said. Definitely a steep learning curve. I suppose the first thing to say is it seems to be quite a hard job. I don't think I'd necessarily fully appreciated how time consuming it was, but also how difficult it is to balance different sort of priorities for different groups, and also balance what you can and can't say in different forums, and what's the best way to get things done and to get the best for trainees. Because there's a sort of part of it which is sharing information from the college and getting the sort of insider know-how that you can share with trainees and feeding that back in. But also there's a certain amount of sort of confidential discussions and works in progress where it can feel a bit uncomfortable because you know more than some of your colleagues know about ongoing discussions, but aren't able to share all the details of that. So it's a hard job. It certainly feels like it's important, and that's exciting because it means we sit in really interesting meetings, and that we really feel we've got an opportunity to try and get the best for trainees going forward. But it's certainly hard. And I think now that this sort of emergenciness of COVID has settled a bit, actually people really want to see assessments that are quality assured. They want to know what's happening next. The sort of acceptability of delays and changes coming last minute has decreased, and people want to know what's happening in the next 6 to 12 months, not at short notice.
And so since you got started, what would you say is kind of the biggest concern that you've heard from trainees? What's the kind of feeling on the ground amongst trainees when it comes to like morale or other things that they might be concerned or kind of highlighted as big issues at the minute?
So I think a focal part of what we're hearing is around assessment, and that's not a surprise. You know, I sort of just submitted the RCA on this last sitting. Sophie's finished both of her assessments, but had experience of piloting the RCA as well. And, you know, anything that's been produced sort of that quickly and put in so quickly as a result of the sort of the emergency of the pandemic was always going to shake things up a bit, because it was a massive U-turn, you know, from going to everybody doing the exam that they knew, or they knew people who had sat it, or people in the years ahead of them. You know, they felt that they had a good grasp of what to expect from the CSA. And I actually felt a bit of a sort of almost a grieving process myself, because I just, you know, I knew what the CSA was about. As I said, friends had sat it. I knew what I had to do to pass it. And then suddenly you're sort of blindsided by this completely new assessment. And so it's not been a surprise, really, that a lot of our communication and a lot of the concerns that we're feeding back up to the college is around assessment, be it when people can sit them, how many sittings they're going to be. You know, February starters are a particular group that we've been hearing a lot from. So yeah, assessment has been quite a big one. But then, you know, there are a lot of little factions that come off that sort of, you know, trainee well-being in general, redeployments, you know, people feeling that they're missing out on training opportunities, or they feel that some of their training time has been sort of lost because of the pandemic. So yeah, the you know, COVID has affected everyone in the world in lots of different ways, but I think it has affected GP trainees in some very sort of particular ways that are unique to us. And it's been really important to understand what those ways are and what we can try and do to mitigate.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, assessments is at the forefront of any sort of training process. Is we know that assessments drive learning, and trainees want to feel that they're in a position to get through exams. They're expensive exams, and they drive a lot of training time, and there's a lot of worry surrounding them. And I suppose the RCA gets the most airtime because it's the new one. But there's been lots of worries about the AKT as well, whether it was going to go ahead in January, what the position was going to be on whether shielding trainees could sit and whether there would be a remote option. But also the workplace-based assessments as well. There's in the background those churning around. You have to get a certain number of reserve consultations. There's a new leadership assessment prescribing quality improvement projects and activities. So there's the whole tripos that has had subtle changes and some big changes that trainees are adjusting to. And I think the well-being piece around trainees is really important, because there's so much uncertainty, and uncertainty that is protracted can really have a profound effect on how trainees cope with things and feel that they're progressing in their training. So I think what trainees want more than anything else at the moment is a degree of certainty about what's going to happen over the rest of their training. And so they can plan and feel like they're progressing like they should be.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I just remember being in the throes of all of this last year, just after the first wave began. And it's, I mean, it sounds like stuff hasn't particularly changed dramatically in terms of like the key issues, which, you know, is natural. Like you say, exams make up such an important, and assessment make up such an important part of the experience of trainees. Uncertainty and kind of like a massive change in what we all knew beforehand is always going to kind of whip people up and make it, you know, even more challenging. So yeah, I can definitely remember being right where you both are at the minute this time last year, and it is challenging and it is stressful. So I hope that you're both doing okay as well. And Adam, I don't know if you've already got your results or not, but good luck with your own RCA sitting as well.
No, not yet. I think it's the 15th. So a bit more waiting to do. Just to add though, Anthony, respect to you for doing this by yourself last year. You know, it's having two of us is definitely I would be a bit lost without Sophie, even just to sort of bounce off what's going on. And we approach things in slightly different ways, and sort of having two sort of viewpoints on things can be really, really helpful. So, you know, well done for surviving that by yourself.
Yeah, definitely. We can interject there. I think as the podcast team, we were always really kind of looking at Anthony, going, how are you managing all the things that you're doing? But, you know, it's always good to have lots of heads trying to come up with solutions. And I think Adam and Sophie, you've definitely achieved that. Johannes and I are reps on the advisory network. And obviously it's a slightly different way in which the old rep system is now working, and actually getting keen and enthusiastic members and trainees from ST1 right up to ST3 involved, maybe in specific areas that they're interested in terms of engagement or membership or well-being and things like that. And having attended a couple of the meetings obviously over the last couple of months, I think that there's been a number of significant improvements. I think one of the things I wanted to sort of touch upon that you've all sort of mentioned is this uncertainty. And I think that's been, you know, the word of the last, 12 months for everybody. But it's actually taking a step back and thinking 12 months ago, the RCA didn't even exist really as an exam. It was more of a scramble time. No one knew what they were doing. Anthony was sort of firefighting, getting hundreds and deluges of emails of what we're going to do. And actually no one really knew the answer. And, you know, it's led to the survey being done and an exam being created. So now I know what you're saying. It's so interesting, Adam, you're there waiting for your result. And this feels like, okay, this is, we're on sort of a treadmill and where is this going? I guess the question that I wanted to ask is, undoubtedly lots of trainees will have been hearing whisperings from various VTS members or other people about, oh, this is what a new assessment is going to be like, or this is the timeline of the new assessment. And I suppose this would be a really good platform for you guys to sort of tell us, what should trainees be expecting? What do we know? And also, what don't we know? Because I think that's a fair question for trainees to ask, but also to get the most reliable information sources they can. Sophie, can you sort of share that information?
Yeah, so I suppose, so we are surrounded by trainees who share all those same anxieties. Everybody wants to be able to plan for their training going ahead. And I suppose the first thing to say is that the decision hasn't been made. There's nobody sitting in an office in the RCGP going, yeah, I know exactly what's going to be the next exam, but I'm going to withhold that information until we know more. That those discussions are actively ongoing at the moment, and there's no options that have been taken off the table. And it's not a simple RCA versus CSA. It's what kind of assessment do we need that's going to be fair and future proof for the GPs that we want to be treating us and our relatives for the next 40 years. So there's no decision being made, but there's some things that we do know. So the college have committed to giving no less than 6 months notice about any changes to exams. So if you are due to sit an exam in the next 6 months, you can be absolutely confident that that exam format isn't going to change. And the other thing that we know is that the college have committed that if moving forward with a new exam or when they move beyond the RCA, they have to have an exam that's properly quality assured and piloted. There wasn't time with the RCA because there were 1,500 trainees waiting to CCT who needed some format of assessment to come in as an emergency for them to get through it. But we now have the opportunity to produce the exam of the future that's going to be in play for at least the next sort of 5-10 years, depending on how things go. So what that means is that isn't a quick process. So to develop a new exam on average, from what I've heard from older and wiser people, usually takes several years, but they're hoping that they can do it quicker than us. But to properly quality assure and engage with the right stakeholders and then pilot a new exam, that takes at least 12 to 18 months. So if I was an ST2 at any point in my ST2, and definitely was an ST3, I would be pretty confident that I'd be sitting the RCA. And we've raised this as a concern from trainees that people don't want this sudden shock exam where they're switching from the RCA to a new format without enough notice. And the college have taken that on board. There's not going to be one moment where you're sitting the RCA and then suddenly, if you're not booked by this date, you're going to be sitting the new one. They're mindful that people will be preparing for these exams far in advance. So I think if I was an ST2, I'd be confident I'd sit in the RCA. If I was a late ST1, I'd be confident that I'm going to get enough notice in order to prepare for what comes next.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful information. And as you say, we don't have all the answers, but that's because the decisions haven't been made. And I think that one of the things that both of you have sort of championed for trainees is that transparency and clear communication that we want from the college. I know in sort of previous meetings, there is a sense from trainees of not always being entirely sure what the remit of the college is or what the remit of Health Education England is with some of our training, but also in terms of how transparent certain processes or meetings and things like that will be. And I suppose kind of looking from the outside in, it can sometimes seem like a little bit of an ivory tower. We've sort of heard those words said by trainees a lot of the time. And I think, I guess one of the things I want to shout out about the advisory network is that we're trying to get as many trainees involved in these meetings as possible. As you said, it's a whole heap of work. And actually for you both, Adam and Sophie, to try and attend and be involved in every single committee is practically impossible. So it's trying to get people aware of what's going on, and if they've got a specific interest, to sort of get involved with that. Would you sort of agree that's what the network's about, Adam?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I was just going to go back to a point that you were saying about transparency. I think what we've learned, I mean, certainly I came into this role, you know, wanting to get, you know, no ambiguity, really clear messages from the college, in a timely fashion to the trainees, so that there was, you know, less opportunity for, you know, rumours and worry and anxiety sort of building up because of sort of the fear of the unknown kind of thing. But I suppose there's a difference between transparency and sort of fueling that, those kind of rumours and that kind of thing, if we don't have concrete information. And that's why, you know, we've seen from some trainees that there is a slight frustration that sometimes it may feel that we're not releasing information or confirming information from the college sort of as quickly as we possibly could. But, you know, the RCA is all the more surprising to me now that you know, the amount of work that went into it to get it in place, because like any sort of organisation like the Royal College, many, many people have to agree and many, many people have to be on the same page with a decision for it to then go ahead and become reality. So you know, the college have committed to releasing sort of semi-regular updates now about examinations, because we were getting, you know, the feeling that there was just all this confusion and some people had heard a particular fact in one BTS area and they'd heard a different fact in another one. And that's why we wanted to be really sure that when something was released, that it was clear, that it was unambiguous, and that it tried to sort of dispel as many myths and sort of rumours as possible by being as concrete as possible. So hopefully by releasing these sort of updates semi-regularly, that will remove some of that anxiety. But yeah, to answer your question about whether I agree that's what the network is for, that's absolutely what the network is for, is to bring a group of like-minded people together who are passionate about training, passionate about influencing and sort of formulating what training looks like, not only for us, but for the future generations of GP trainees. And just allows everyone to get involved, you know, to as little or as great a degree as they want to. You know, if there's a particular area you're really passionate about, then we can plug you into that particular area of work. But if you want to just, you know, be part of the network and actually keep abreast of all the different developments, that's fine as well. But it's just allowing that flexibility so that we can get as many people who are passionate about it as possible. And then that, the, you know, the more people we have, the more passionate they are, the stronger the voice to the college then.
Absolutely. And I think one of the other things I just wanted to say as well is, as much as I'm sure all of us have things like Zoom and Teams fatigue, one of the nice things about having Zoom is I've actually met so many sort of keen RCGP AIT rep people who are from so far flung and nicely outside the M25. Although Anthony, myself and Johannes, well, Anthony was a London trainee. It's actually really important to hear about the experiences, because you hear such a wide breadth and variety, even in terms of placements people are doing, ITP posts that might be available, and actually sharing that information to try and solve issues that might be happening in one place or another. And, you know, at the last meeting, we've had reps from the, you know, representing the Highlands and Islands of Scotland, Northern Ireland. And actually, everyone's got that unique experience that they want to bring in. So that's been a really positive thing, one good thing of Zoom, I can say.
Definitely. I think virtual has enormous possibilities. It's an exciting thing that it can really increase the diversity and accessibility of leadership. You no longer necessarily have to be in London or, as you say, around the M25 or in Southampton, Oxford, KSS type places to be able to easily get involved. And that's really important, because I'll give you an example, just one thing the other day that I hadn't really quite clocked. And that was mainly because I hadn't spent a lot of time speaking to Scottish trainees. But the way they're out of hours fits in their training is quite different from ours, and they actually have a contractual obligation to do it. So whilst I'm having conversations about out of hours requirements decreasing and urgent and unscheduled care being about competency rather than hours, minimum hours, actually the situation in Scotland is different. And it's important that with all these things that affect training, that we realise that they're nuanced in different areas, and diversifying the trainee voice into the network and other forums that we're involved in is really important. One thing that Adam and I were really keen on when we took up this role was that we diversify the sort of leadership voice for trainees. It comes down to one of those balancing acts where certain meetings it makes a lot of sense to have a continuity of trainee voice. There's some themes that run along several meetings where it has to be the chair or co-chair, but it's also useful to be someone who's sitting another meeting that links up. But there's also lots of other meetings that benefit from trainee voices around, for example, the Innovate magazine. There's been lots of changes with that recently. Really important to have a trainee voice because they're the main end user of that product. So unless you've got trainee input, then actually it doesn't end up being what's best for trainees. And that's just one example of where it's a good place to get involved if you're interested in that stuff is via the network. And I suppose the only other thing I wanted to say was that I suppose sometimes it's difficult for us to show that we're listening to people, even though we do. We keep an eye on lots of issues coming up in lots of different places. But one thing that we heard very loud and clear was that trainees were frustrated when the college was putting website updates without an email to tell them that that was happening. And the college's perspective was that they didn't want to flood people's inboxes with constant updates about what they were updating on the website. And that's where this idea to have a regular exams update, because that's clearly something at the forefront of trainees' minds. But just to say that there have been some updates with work-based peer assessment that was based on trainee feedback about worries about the leadership MSF and QIP, QIA, and we fed back issues we were hearing from trainees about how to go about that, and they have updated the guidance to make it clearer around aspects of that. So the college website should be a first port of call for quite a lot of issues to do with anything to do with the assessment, TRIPOS, or professionalism type issues in training, because they do keep it very up to date, but they have committed to sending regular assessment emails, so at least we know what's been updated and there's not sort of rumours and hearsay about it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of those things that will come up time and time again is people wanting to know how many replies do I need? How much of a QIP or QIA, and what are the workplace-based assessments? Because obviously when COVID happened, the first wave, there were changes in what the requirements were. And then subsequently there was sort of a change back, and we've all had to migrate to a new portfolio. I mean, probably not that new, but it still feels a bit difficult to navigate at times. I think, Anthony, you managed to escape from the 14-fish.
I literally had to change over like 2 weeks before my final ARCP. So it was like, anyway.
Okay, fine. So maybe you had it different the most. Exactly. So, change is definitely the word of the season. And I think the fact that we can have those regular updates in terms of what's expected, but also that the source of information, the website, is updated, so that trainees who are keen, that want to know what's going on, and often those are the trainees that then share it with those VTS groups going, actually guys, there's this or there's that. And you know, we do rely a lot on VTS trainees sharing that wealth of information with each other and sharing opportunities and other things that might be going on. And that's obviously how we all get involved and getting to know each other as well. So it's that then we're not just single silos of getting that information and not broadcasting that out, but making sure that it's reliable and verified information as well, I guess, is really important. I'm really aware that Johannes has been sitting and listening and nodding and then trying to unmute himself, and then we've all spoken over him. So I'm just gonna go to Johannes about anything that you wanted to ask the chairs whilst we've got them here.
I don't have anything that exciting to say, so I was quite happy just listening to everyone else's wonderful performance. I was just gonna agree with what you've all been saying, and I think you guys have been doing a huge amount of work to try and reassure trainees about everything that's happening. And I think that a big proportion of that anxiety is just there because we're not meeting each other face-to-face in our VTS sessions, because they were such a good opportunity to kind of to share anxieties and then get reassurance from our peers. So hopefully, VTSs will return before too long, and then some of that pressure will come off you because we'll kind of be able to self-regulate our anxiety a little bit more. But Yeah, it'll be nice. I haven't seen you for so long in the flesh mirror. And yeah, it would be nice to interact with our co-chairs as well, because I've only really witnessed you in a virtual so far. So maybe my question to the co-chairs would be, what are you looking forward to? You've kind of talked about how complex and sometimes stressful it can be performing your role. So do you want to reflect maybe on some of the best bits of what you're looking forward to over the next few months?
Yeah, I think it can be very easy to sort of dwell on as you say, what you know, the complex issues and the sort of issues that are really sort of pressing to get sorted. You know, we've got plenty of ideas of how we want to sort of you know, that we've got other things. You know, we ran the February Starters Conference that went really, really well. You know, we've got sort of Celebrate, which was started under Anthony, is you know, we're still sort of producing new content for that. And you know, we had plenty of ideas of other things we wanted to do. For instance, you know, we were going to do, or hopefully we'll still do, a session called GP Plus, maybe not a session, or sort of content called GP Plus, where we would sort of try and focus on almost legitimizing being a GP with another interest, you know, be that in education or leadership or in another specialty. I think it's really important to give, you know, GPs that sort of do manage to sort of combine other interests and other sort of facets to their day-to-day work, and give them sort of exposure, because you might just inspire, you know, one of the GP trainees coming along that is exactly what they'd like their sort of career to look like in the future. So there are plenty of sort of exciting things like that we'd like to get done, and hopefully we'll see, you know, more time and more capacity in people's brains and schedules for that kind of thing once we've sort of nailed down some of the stuff that's causing more anxiety. But to pick up on what you said, Johannes, I absolutely hope that VTSs do return. I think it's a huge strong point of GP training in this country, possibly, you know, more so than any other specialty, to be honest, that it really does encourage that sort of community, encourages, you know, groups of people to get together. And as you say, you can bounce things off your peers, because sometimes it can feel lonely being a GP when you're sat in a room seeing patients for hours on end, when actually being able to go and vent and sort of de-stress with colleagues that are going through the same thing as you is I don't think that, you know, you can put a price on how important that is. So hopefully that will definitely come back.
I am looking forward to a holiday. Oh, sorry, Anthony, you go ahead first.
No, you go.
It's not related to this role at all, but I just think everybody needs a break. It's with working from home or just Zooming from home, whatever you're doing, it's all at home. And I think it makes it very difficult to not let the boundaries between work and home life become very overlapped. So I'm really looking for a holiday, and I think everybody else is too. And I hope that when we move forward from COVID, with COVID potentially still going on a bit in the background and managing vaccination programs for years to come, I hope that we get the balance right between what has been really good about virtual, because it is really good in many different ways, and what are the really important things that have been missed that need to go straight back to face-to-face, because they're just better done that way and you get more out of them. And I agree with Johannes and Adam that VTS is one of those things where peer support is often better facilitated face-to-face. But still, there's always the other side of the coin where trainees say, well, actually, I can sometimes pop in when I'm on call, if it's virtual, if I've got a couple of minutes just to say hi to people, or it means that I don't have to pay for childcare then, because, you know, I can watch the baby whilst listening into VTS. So there's pros and cons, and I think we need to have a real think as things move forward about the balancing act between what is best done online and this balance between convenience and the important things that you need out of seeing people and connecting face to face. Sorry, Anthony, I interrupt you. I was so excited to tell you that I might go on holiday sometime soon.
No, not at all. I think you're totally on the money there. I think and also for the two of you as well, I do hope that once COVID restrictions start to relax a little bit, you get to experience some more face to face stuff at the college as well. Like, definitely the transition to remote working and doing everything remotely came a few months into my tenure as chair. But, you know, going to council meetings, having some of those meetings you're having now virtually face to face, I think did add something to the experience. So I hope that you get to have a little bit of that as well. Obviously, it's a bit of a trek down to Euston Square for both of you, but if you're only having to do it occasionally, I think it is a nice part of the job as well. And I think, you know, that is something that we're all missing out on, is those the face-to-face connections, which then make kind of decision making outside of those face-to-face meetings all the more easy as well, once you've had the opportunity to build relationships in a slightly different way with people. And also, we should probably shamelessly plug the RCGP annual conference, which hopefully will also be happening face-to-face as well. Another amazing opportunity to catch up with friends and colleagues from around the country, and hopefully some of us will be there and get to see each other as well. So great, thank you so much, Adam and Sophie, for sharing with us. We'll definitely have you back in a couple of months or so, just to catch up and see how things are going. And yeah, thank you for sharing with us. Any final comments that either of you wanted to make at all?
Thank you for having us. It's always good to get on a soapbox and get stuff off our chest.
Well, it sounds like you're both doing an amazing job. And for anybody, any trainees who might be listening who are interested in getting involved in the advisory network, what's the best way that they can go about doing that?
So the best way is probably to go through their faculty. So the only reason I say that is because the website's being updated, but I'm not sure it's been updated quite yet. Because the best way to get the details of how to get on our Slack group is through completing an expressions of interest form that asks you about your areas of interest, what area you'd be dialing in from, and where your VTS area is. But if you contact your faculty, and the best way to find out which faculty you're in is to go on the RCGP website and click on the faculty. And if you contact their administrator, they can put you in touch with Claude, who administrates our AIT network, and he'll send you the expressions of interest form. But it's important to say that we really are looking for diverse representation. So even if you've never even spoken to a rep before, don't know anyone on the network, that doesn't preclude you from being involved. So get in touch, and we'd be keen to hear your views. And we meet, as Adam was saying, for almost monthly. And I suppose my take home, just a couple of things to just reassure trainees is one, there will be a regular update on assessments coming from the exams team by email, but it is still worth keeping an eye on the website, because they do regular updates, particularly around work-based place assessments, and that's usually the best first port of call. If you scroll down the bottom, there's lots of FAQs and attachments that have really helpful things written by trainees to support you in doing your work-based place assessments. And the other thing is that we are still listening, so we neither of us are particularly vocal on things like Twitter or social media, but we are very we do a lot of listening and watching and seeing what people are saying to get an idea of what's bothering trainees in different forums. So, you know, we're hearing about issues with Feb finishers and exam timetable, and how that affects people who finish at different times of the year, not having the same opportunities to sit, bites of the apple in terms of sitting the exams. And we're hearing about issues with wellbeing and people missing BTS and all these sorts of things coming up around assessments and other things. So keep speaking about them in open forums, discussing them, feedback to us, and we try and feed those into the most appropriate places to get things improved for you guys.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Thanks for all the amazing work that you're both doing, and look forward to catching up with you both very soon. Cool. So it was really good to catch up with Sophie and Adam. It has been a good few months since I've had the opportunity to have a chat with them both, and it was really interesting to hear about everything that's been happening for them and their experiences so far. It's also interesting that still the main topic of debate is all around exams, which brings back both happy memories and nightmares from my time as AIT chair. How did you guys find the conversation? Hatim, I think importantly for you, you're kind of in the midst of doing your RCA at the minute. How are you feeling about everything related to exams?
So exams at the moment, I guess I'm probably not in the best space to be really happy about them. But at the same time, I think it's you know, people always have lots of anxiety. It's always a really difficult topic because a lot of it is out of our control, and decisions get made that you know, we can't really influence completely, but we can have a bit of a say on, and we do need to be feeding back on where things are not quite working. Look, the RCA, I think, has become a necessity for the current situation. And I think that's why it is where it is. And there are some really good things about the RCA. I actually would want to start with that. And I think for me, it's made a real big difference to the way I consult. So one, I think it's real life and you have real life patients. And therefore, you really get into the habit of making sure you can try and do an effective consultation within 10 minutes, which is a really hard ask in general practice. But actually is the key to really being I don't think competent GP is the right word, because I think you can be competent and consult for longer. But I think the reality is that the working practices that we do, most people do have 10-minute appointments. So we have to be at a stage where we can go and work in any practice and do a 10-minute appointment effectively. At the same time, I think it really helps you deliver some of your communication skills. So I think it really helps you sort of refine things like finding out what is important to the patient and managing what's important to the patient. And I think it really helps you build rapport and relationships with patients, because you do focus on those factors when you're practicing for the exam, and it helps you be much more succinct in your sort of examination and management. So there are lots of good things about the RCA in terms of training you to be a really good GP. The problem with it, I think, is the logistics of collecting the cases and recording the cases and all of the things around making sure you've got the consent, you have to worry about that. Making sure you get all your mandatory criteria, and you have to worry about that. Making sure that you've got the ability to access the platform. And, you use something called a 14 fish platform for the majority of the time, where I'm a less than full time trainee. So I've had a period of, you have 6 months to get cases, but when you sign up for the exam, you essentially have a 5 or 6 week window to collect cases. And that's when you get your sort of 600 minutes. Now I'm sitting here with a couple of weeks to go with about 400 minutes left, because in reality, those 600 minutes came too late for me as a less than full-time trainee. And I had to be collecting cases much more earlier, because I only do 2 days of general practice a week. So in those cases, it can become very frustrating. And actually, even if you're a full-time trainee, it takes a lot of time to get yourself up to that standard and also get what they are looking for in terms of the examiners. So you're almost reliant on this 6 week window of getting 600 minutes to do your recordings. But actually what you really need is minutes all along the way. And what you find is you end up paying for minutes on top of paying for an exam, which is, already quite expensive. So I think there are some concerns around that. And there's also an inequity in the accessibility to different platforms for recording. So I managed to get I managed to get an iConnect license to record cases. But many learners won't get that opportunity and will have to pay for minutes on 14 fish, which is not really fair. Other learners will be doing other methods of recording that might not necessarily be as safe from a GDPR point of view as well for patients. So we really need to get, I think that side of things really needs to be factored and looked at by 14 fish and also by the RCGP. In terms of what happens in the future, who knows? And I think that's probably one of the most fascinating things about that conversation with Adam and Sophie. Now, ultimately, we need a sustainable exam that's fair to everyone, that doesn't sort of discriminate against anyone, and that doesn't also cause unneeded sort of distress or affect well-being of our learners, which I think sometimes the exams do. And it's impossible to always achieve the right balance, but I think we can get.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying, Hatem. And I think, as Ant has already said, and lots of people said before, that the last sort of 12 months has been a complete game changer in terms of exams. Even how people have been having to sit the AKT wearing masks for 3 hours and not being able to get the scheduled breaks that they normally would have planned, or things like that. I myself sat it in January, and it was quite an experience, to be honest, but I'm glad that's over and done with. And I think one of the main things that Adam and Sophie sort of relayed, which I was glad to hear them say, is one, that the college recognised the importance of communication, the fact that our trainees, we need to hear what's going on and we need to be able to plan for our futures. You know, people have their lives, they have families, they have children, they have plans, and to be able to know when you're going to book an exam, and also to have that backup option if in fact you do fail, you do know that you're not waiting months and months to then have to resit an exam, which I think is really important. So I look forward to getting more updates from the college about sort of future plans. And I guess the second thing is about a new assessment. I think Adam and Sophie managed to sort of allay my fears, I guess, as an ST2 going into an ST3 job in August, that we would be getting a 6 month notice period before there were any changes to an exam. So obviously everyone knows that it was an emergency situation last year. Things had to change quickly because there were, you know, a significant proportion of trainees that were waiting to CCT, so they needed an immediate response. And that's kind of developed the birth of this RCA, which we know is here to stay until another exam has been piloted and approved and gone through all the rigorous checks that an assessment would normally go through that the college was going to make. So I suppose, although there are still quite a lot of uncertainties, we know that we know what we don't know, I suppose, is the way to put it. And that the college is committed to inform us as soon as they're able to and make sure that it is an equal and fair exam that people are sitting. And in the background of all of that, I think there's a lot of work that's going into the problems that exist with differential attainment that we know have been there for a number of years across both assessments, specifically with our international sort of medical graduates, as well as I think another problem that needs to be looked into is the capacity and provision for shielding trainees. So to date, there's obviously, specifically for the AKT, there hasn't been a workaround solution as yet, but obviously that's something that the college really needs to look into.
Yeah, I mean, I think something that I felt, and this is true in all walks of life, but something that I definitely felt last summer when the first first lockdowns came and all of the initial changes were going through was the big thing that upsets trainees and makes everything just 10 times more difficult is uncertainty. So I think at least having greater clarity over what the next 6 months to a year is going to look like, a promise of better, still ongoing improvements in communications will hopefully help things. But I agree with Hatim that definitely will be interesting. The most interesting thing is thinking about what a future iteration of the exam is going to look like will be. I know that there's a lot of work going on in that area now to think of what this kind of hybrid style exam is. I'm glad that it sounds like we're not going to go back to the old CSA as it was before. I think that the RCA has shown that there are real benefits of having more real life interactions and having an exam which feels more applicable to the new world of general practice that we're all working in. So it'll be really interesting to see how that continues to develop over the coming months and year, I guess, as well. But yeah, I guess for you, Mira, it sounds like the RCA is going to be on the cards. So at least you now, I hope, feel greater sense of clarity and certainty over that. And hopefully that will be helpful for similar people in your situation as well.
Yeah, definitely. I hope so. Obviously, there's the 14 fish things that Hatim has talked about that may need ironing out. But don't worry, Hatim, I'll be coming to you for tips in a few months' time, I guess. But I think, again, we're hoping to be speaking to Adam and Sophie regularly, aren't we, through this year as well. So if there are any other updates, of course, the college will be emailing you, and there are lots of forums where you can get RCGP news specifically pertaining to AITs, including the Innovate magazine and things like that. But we will also be using this podcast as a forum to sort of update people. But I guess in a slight change, we're going to be looking at some stuff also geared towards first five and early career GPs. So I think we recognize that obviously we have 3 years of training, but that's towards a common goal. And that goal is obviously for us to become GPs in that working world. And what are the things that would be important for that journey as well? So I guess we're going to have quite an interesting episode next month, aren't we, Ant?
Yes. Thinking about the journey that people go on through the transition straight out of general practice training into being a fully qualified GP, we're going to be talking to myself and a range of other fairly recently qualified GPs, looking at the first 100 days of their post-CCT life. What's it look like? What have they learned? And what are any tips that they'll be able to give to people? So that's what we'll be bringing you next time. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Hatim and Mira and Johannes as well for all being here for this episode. And we'll see you all very soon for another episode of Somewhere in Between. See you later.
Bye.
He tripped and he just fell down the stairs, basically to the bottom of the stairs, and he just shook it off and he carried on. But then he was a bit, I think he was a bit shocked and stuff, and then he just peed on the carpet.
We need to make clear to Bryn that we're talking about a cat and not a child.
Safeguarding. Yeah, otherwise is safeguarding cats a thing? I don't know.